Hello, my name is Joe Mangano, and this is supportfortheshort.org. It's 2012, and we're ready to roll. You know, we're just a little bit tougher and just a little bit stronger than we used to be in bygone days. And if you interpret that as a Napoleon complex, well, that's unfortunate. We're ready for a new paradigm. Short people and short men, or short men in particular, have been discriminated against, ridiculed, and really disparaged, I think, the way probably no other group has been disparaged in today's society. And it's not covert either. It's becoming more and more overt as time goes by. Now, much of this stems from the media's influence on the minds of people, I think, especially young people. The media conditions each successive generation of young people and takes them more and more in the direction that they want them to go in. And the general trend is in the direction of superficiality, plastic people, you know, people who live their lives, I think, on a superficial level and pretend that they really have great lives when they don't. And the media conditions young people and adults both to emulate what they see, whether it's on TV, in the movies, on the news, in sports, etc. Most adults today are overweight too, you know, some severely overweight. People are getting more and more hooked on things like prescription drugs. They're hooked on texting, on talking on the cell phone. And there's a lot of good evidence that electromagnetic radiation from things like cell phones is actually damaging to your health, possibly even damaging to your own DNA. And that's one of the reasons why my own cell phone is off 99.9% of the time. But, you know, if we're talking about superficiality, women seem to be extremely superficial in many things that they do, at least here in the United States, and most things that they want, whether it's clothes, cosmetics, where they go, who they're seen with, up to and including guys or men. Now, I just want to point out that it's not politically correct to criticize women in today's media at any level, in any amount. Only women are supposed to do that to men. That's okay, everywhere you go. That's a woman's right and privilege, and that's basically the way that it's portrayed by the media today. It's okay for women to disparage men, like that female comic that's depicted on the videos page of my website. I think her name is Frances DiLorenzo. She just can't get enough of berating short men. And she gets plenty of laughs doing it. I mean, could you picture a comic who's a guy disparaging women like that and getting a good reaction from the audience? But, you know, that's just one example. I mean, you'd have to be totally deluded not to notice how plastic people have become, especially women. Now, I want to emphasize again just how politically incorrect it is to say anything negative about women. But we're not doing this to be politically correct here. We're doing this to get the facts out into the open. We have a guest on this broadcast, and he's a guy whose eyes are open as well, and his name is Winston Wu. Winston's website is happierabroad.com, and just to give you a little biographical information on Winston, he is an Asian-American expatriated writer, traveler, and online entrepreneur. He was born in Taiwan, and he emigrated to the U.S. when he was 3. He grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. He's a pioneer in the international dating and living movement and is considered the movement's intellectual champion. He's been featured on various alternative media interviews, and he's publicly known as a great free thinker, champion of truth, debunker of BS, propaganda, mind control, and logic fallacies. A quality extremely rare among Asians, with a high level of awareness and propensity to think outside the box. He has written many articles and books with truthful insights, revelations, useful advice, free thought, revolutionary solutions, and politically incorrect but accurate cultural comparisons. Now, he's the founder of two websites: Happier Abroad, which is a global dating and living website, and Skepcop. And that's a coalition, the first, to counter and debunk organized pseudo-skeptic groups and other forms of propaganda. And I'm taking that right off his website. Now, Winston, I know I gave you a little bit of a bio on you, but could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what motivated you to start your website, Happier Abroad, and, you know, I guess some of the things that you've learned living here in the United States?
Okay, well, my name is Winston Wu, and I grew up in California, and the dating scene was always really competitive there, and you know, as a short Asian male, you know, I just wasn't really really considered or in the game, and so I had gone dateless for most of my life, and you know, every few years, you know, I'd have a girlfriend here and there, but they were never really compatible with me or what I really wanted, and so I didn't have very many choices. And plus, ever since the 1990s, the culture in California has, like you said, become so plastic, and everyone is all business related, and this university I went to in Hayward was so, I mean, it was just so sterile. Everyone was there not to socialize, but to quickly get through so they could get a degree and make money. And so, I mean, the whole culture that I grew up in was so, seemed so heartless and soulless, like devoid of heart, spirit, and camaraderie, too. So, I was never, even though I had so many material comforts and luxuries, you know, being in the Bay Area, Fremont's where I grew up, by the way, I had so many comforts and luxuries, but, you know, there was just no connection with others, no camaraderie, no love, no romance, no adventure, you know, because I have more of a European type of soul in that I live for passion and romance and adventure, and the society I grew up in was just devoid of all that. And plus, as a short Asian male, I was discriminated against, and most American women just saw me as very asexual and just not even considered to be dating material to them. So I was pretty frustrated for many years, and so one day I moved to Nevada. You know, Nevada's pretty fun. I had some fun there. I had a girlfriend, and then moved back, and then I moved to Washington, and then, you know, it got even worse than there because you know, there's just so much political correctness, and after the 90s passed, more and more women were beginning to see men as creeps, and so I felt like you couldn't even be a guy who had desires, a normal guy with normal desires for dating women without being seen as a creep. So basically, you know, especially like in liberal cities like San Francisco and Seattle, you're expected to just mind your own business, and you're not allowed to have, you know, any desires for women unless, you know, she has desires for you. Otherwise, you're a creep and a pervert. So I just felt so oppressed all around, and the only, you know, one day I decided to go over to Russia to try to do the Russian bride thing. So I started writing women there, and then I just took a plunge, thinking this might be my only way to go overseas, to go outside the U.S. matrix. And I was pretty shocked. I mean, everything just seemed so laid back, down to earth, and there was camaraderie, and people were authentic and genuine. I'm not saying other countries have a better life, I mean, in terms of material things, but I mean, they have, you know, like their share of problems, crimes, and corruptions. But everything just felt more authentic and down to earth, and I felt like I could be myself. And people were just so open to strangers, and women were just so feminine and thin, and they were very friendly to males, and didn't have this hatred toward men, and didn't treat them like creeps. And ever since then, my life has been, I mean, that experience opened my eyes, and ever since then, I've been changed. It's like I was born again, and so that gave me so much hope, and discover a whole world outside of America where you know, women were friendly and the environment didn't feel sterile and people were more down to earth and had more a more genuine heart and soul. So ever since then, I've been, you know, writing about this and starting a movement, and eventually, years later, I started to put this all into a website. Little by little, I had a vision of what I wanted to do, and so eventually, I found my true calling, which was to promote international dating and promote truth and promote freedom and a better life in terms of social life, dating, and also mental health and psychological well-being. So this isn't just about dating; it's about just being accepted for who you are and not feeling so much judgment from people around you, which makes you really insecure. And once you're liberated from that, you gain a whole new authentic confidence in which you're accepted for who you are. And what I've learned is that the confidence you have in America is mostly pseudo-confidence. It's very artificial, and it has to be pumped constantly every day. Mm. Whereas the confidence you get overseas is more authentic in that you don't have to pump, you know, an artificial confidence, you know, which is like climbing a treadmill. When people accept you for who you are, you know, especially women, it actually brings forth an authentic confidence where that's really the key that most Americans don't realize is that, you know, that overseas people don't feel so insecure. They don't have this inferiority complex. I mean, they have their problems and crime and corruption and money problems, of course, but they don't feel like they have to prove themselves and they aren't so insecure. You know, whereas in America, you kind of feel like every, you know, you're kind of conditioned to be hostile to others because you see everyone as a competitor, and so everyone out there is like an adversary to you, and there's just too much competition. There's just too much of a competitive mindset in America, which is not healthy because if you think about it, I mean, if your heart was in competing with your liver, I mean, that would that be good for your body? Of course not. I mean, if your heart has to cooperate with your liver and your other organs for you to be healthy and stable. And it's the same with the society or community. When people cooperate, you know, and are connected and have a healthy relationship, that's when there's a more natural human community and life. Mm. But, you know, but when you're competing and seeing everyone as an enemy, I mean, that's just like that just breaks you down. I mean, it's just very dysfunctional. And so, you know, the more I live overseas and the more I write and think, you know, and the more I grow mentally, spiritually, and emotionally, the more I see these things that most people don't see because, I mean, we're not taught to look deeper and to introspect. We're taught to just conform and go along with what everyone thinks and to be distracted by really useless crap like professional sports, celebrity news, tragic news, politics, the weather, economics, gay rights, and all these useless topics that don't have any relevance to our lives, you know, our misery, our enslavement, you know. And I just learned so much, and you know, and every day I'm putting it out there, you know, on my website, my forum, and articles, and interviews like these, etc. You know, so that's how my movement began.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, what I wanted to point out, you know, you mentioned San Francisco, and I always got the image of San Francisco as being very, I guess, liberal, free, but you defined it as very, like, sterile. And I always thought, you know, of women, especially women who are located in that particular place, as being wonderfully friendly, open, and, you know, all sorts of positive things. And it just goes against my image. I've never been to San Francisco, by the way, but it just goes against my image of what that particular town is like. So it's what you said is basically a surprise to me.
Well, you can look on the internet. I mean, I've seen several blogs that talk about the dating scene in San Francisco, and supposedly it's one of the worst places for men. I mean, it's like Well, I guess you have rights there, you know. I mean, it's very open to you if you're like a gay or a lesbian or you have some alternative lifestyle or some perversion. I don't know, but if you're a heterosexual male that likes women, I mean, the women there are not just liberal, but they have this hatred of men, of flirting, you know, they just don't reciprocate. I mean, it's not...
Feminist?
It's a movie. The feminism is very strong there, you know, and there's a man-hating attitude. And it's similar to Seattle in that you're considered a creep if you're a guy who likes to flirt or have desires. Whereas, you know, in a lot of other countries, I mean, you go to South America, you go to Russia, flirting is part of the culture. Even in Italy, people flirt even when they're at work. I mean, a guy who is a waiter at a restaurant is allowed to flirt with his customers in Italy because, I mean, flirting in a lot of cultures is natural. It's part of being a man. It's accepted. It's encouraged, too. I mean, it's seen as a positive thing, whereas, you know, most of America is seen as some creepy, perverted thing, and that's horrible. I mean, if you're a straight guy, so straight men are really oppressed. But that being said, I mean, I do like San Francisco. It has a lot of great culture, you know, great food, and you know, it's a beautiful, charming city, you know. So it's a very nice place, and it's charming, but you know, for dating for straight men and for flirting, it's just an awful nightmare. And Seattle, I'd say, is just as bad, if not worse. But Seattle doesn't have, you know, the culture or the charm. It's a very bland city compared to San Francisco. And I think if you ask people that have lived in both of them, both those places, they'll pretty much tell you the same thing.
You know, I tend to believe there's a lot of truth in what you say. But you know, the thing of it is, many years ago, if we turn the clock back, let's say half a century to the early 1960s, what you're describing now probably did not exist. And a lot of people think the media's influence on people's perception of men and perception of society has sort of rearranged things. And, you know, all that stuff that went on in the 1960s, you know, civil rights, sexual revolution, feminism, gay rights. A lot of people think that all of that had an effect, and that's why we are where we are today. I was wondering how you feel about that and what your thoughts on that would be.
Well, in the 60s, things were different. I mean, if you just look at the movies and the TV shows from the 60s, you'd see that the women look very different. I mean, they look more natural, more
yes.
authentic, and they look more modest and humble, too, and they look far more feminine.
Yes.
I mean, you can see that in pictures, too. And the same is true of the 70s. I mean, women in the 70s looked, you know, a lot more feminine and down-to-earth and natural, too. And if you look at pictures of women in Russia, you would see the same thing. I mean, today, the women there actually look like the way they did in the 60s or 70s in America. And I posted so many pictures on my site and forum showing that. And it's amazing. I don't know why America's changed. Maybe, you know, it might be the food, the genetically modified things, you know, like, but America is a very controlled country, and there's a lot of alternative researchers that say that the people that control America are using the population as sort of an experiment. They put in these genetically modified foods and fluoride in the water, and who knows what they do from the cell phone towers or you know, chemtrails or whatever. I mean, it's just like, and vaccines, of course. And
yeah.
It's like an experimental ground where they test all these strange things, and so it just messes up people in different ways. So I don't think the reasons why Americans are obese is just because they're eating too much or something. I mean, there's probably some other reasons you don't know about, a combination of reasons. So it's not just Americans, but foreign people that come into America and eat and exercise, they still get fat for some reason. There's something in the food, even though it tastes really good and it's very rich and flavorful, there's something that just throws your body out of balance, and it's hard. I'm not a nutritionist or anything, but it's hard to define what that is. But yeah, I mean, in the 60s, snacks were very healthy. They're not like they don't have all the chemicals and preservatives and artificial flavors that they do now. So, but yeah, things have changed then, since then. And as far as the sexual revolution, I mean, I wasn't around during that time. I'm not old enough. But from what I've heard, I mean, that benefited women more than men. Mm. It allowed, it gave women a chance, you know, a license to be promiscuous. But as far as men, so some guys told me, you know, they had a great time, you know, with you know, dating different women back then and stuff. Also in the 80s and the 1990s was when it all went downhill. But I wasn't around at that time to know that. I mean, I was only around in the 80s. But I mean, it really depends on who you ask. And I mean, I guess it was easier to get women and to get laid back then. During the sexual revolution. So, I mean, some guys said it was, and then some guys said it wasn't. But it really depends. I mean, on who you are, of course, and the circles you run in, and what you look like, you know, and you know, your height, your race, you know, and how those women see you, you know. So it really depends on who you are. I mean, your experiences you have all partly depend on who you are, of course.
Yeah. Too. Yeah, you know, you mentioned before about women in the 60s, 70s, and, you know, probably long before that, looking more feminine. You know, I live in New York City here, and, you know, it's very, very easy to find women who dress like men. You know, I'm walking down the street, and I've got jeans on, and I wear these running sneakers, and I've got a, you know, button-down shirt on, and I can see any number of women dressed exactly the same as I do. And, you know, you're looking at these girls, these women, and it's very easy to see how they've become masculinized. I mean, you very rarely see a woman with a skirt on. You very rarely see a woman with a dress on. I hardly ever see a woman with a dress on. So they've become masculinized, and in order for you to maintain your, I don't know how you want to put it, manhood or masculinity, you got to be one of these hyper-masculine guys with your head shaved and covered with tattoos and, you know, 280 pounds of muscle and, you know, who knows what else. But when you see these women, these masculinized women, it actually makes you feel, as a guy, less masculine. And I was wondering if you had noticed that as well.
Well, of course, I think, you know, almost all normal men notice that. I mean, it's just that you're not allowed to talk about it. Like you said at the beginning, you're not allowed to criticize women. I mean, they can get away with anything. So that's a huge double standard in our society.
Yeah, yeah.
The tragedy is that, you know, when women become more masculine, you know, they'll need a guy to be even more masculine, you know, or,
right,
or you know, have even more higher status. And, you know, not every guy, you know, is that masculine. You know, some guys are softer, some guys are nice, sweet types, you know, and those guys will not be seen as attractive by masculine women. So every woman needs a guy to be even more masculine than her, you know, and so some of these guys that you know are more, you know, soft, sweet, nice types, a lot of them, you know, just go to Asia where the women are super feminine and compliment them a lot better. So
yes,
those types actually, you know, have great success in Asia, you know, so because they don't have to be, you know, very masculine there. Whereas, in America, I guess for sure, I mean, you have to be masculine, you have to be tall, you have to have status. I mean, women are just so picky. And a lot of them don't even need men. I mean, they're happy. I mean, they just don't want men. They just don't like them. They have this resistance toward even friendships with other men. I mean, friendships with men. And the ones that are looking are just, you know, super picky. They just don't need them. I mean, the more materialistic women get, the more picky they become, and the less they care about love and romance, and the less caring they are. And it seems like the less feminine they are too. And what they don't understand is that every normal down to earth guy wants a feminine woman. And you know, most men don't need like a model, you know, that's eating 9 or a 10.
Yeah.
They just want a girl that's feminine and sweet and down to earth, and that'll treat them right. You know, and that's what most guys want. So, and it's not a lot to ask. You know, so, you know, the fact that there's so many single, dateless guys in America says that there's a big epidemic. There's a big problem. And it's a taboo problem because you're not supposed to talk about it openly. It makes you feel like a loser if you do. And the mainstream media doesn't want to talk much about this, of course. And if they do, then they cover these, you know, fake PUA artists, you know, pickup artists,
yeah,
seduction artists community. And, you know, that's a bunch of bull, too, because the average guy is not going to change his dating life around just from going to a two. Learning from a PUA seminar guy, I mean, but almost pretty much 100% of guys that I know that have gone overseas, you know, have never wanted to try domestic dating in the U.S. again. They say it's so much more better, it's so much more natural.
Yeah.
The women treat them like men, they appreciate them, they respect them, they act feminine, they're sweet, and girls will blush and giggle. And I mean, who in America blushes and giggles anymore? Not even young girls do. I mean, no, nobody does that anymore. And so men like that. Every man wants a girl that's feminine and down to earth. And it's very, very hard to find it in the U.S. anymore.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's been like a masculinization of women. And that, you know, that's basically what I was talking about before. Their dress, their behavior, you know, the rights. Another thing we face, you know, like, especially like here in New York City, is that you're in competition, they're in competition with men in the workplace. And that makes what you do that much harder. They, as you said, you know, they distrust men. One of the side effects of this is they're having fewer children. There are more divorces. And the divorce courts usually favor women. You know, like if a couple splits up, the guy pays through the nose. So that's another thing that keeps guys not wanting to get married, because they hear stories about, you know, hostile divorces and, you know, these guys just paying out money. And, you know, because it all, you know, it's all in favor of women. And I think a lot of that has created this sense of entitlement that a lot of women have. I certainly think that also results in a feminization of men, because as women get more empowered and the masculine women begin to get more and more power, it sort of forces men to get more and more feminized, and the guys that don't want to get feminized do what you did and what you were talking about a lot of other guys doing, going overseas and meeting, you know, more natural acting and more feminine type women in other countries.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, you mentioned the women dressing like men in New York City. And New York is actually one of the last places in America where women still have a fashion sense, where they still try to dress really nice and with good fashion. I mean, most of America, such as in the suburbia America, in those areas, people have no fashion sense. I mean, they just wear, you know, very simple, you know, jeans or sweatpants and just you know, any crummy shirt they can put on. So in most of America, which is suburbia, there's like far less of a fashion sense than in New York. New York is actually one of the last places where there's still some fashion left in America.
Well, I don't know. If you walk the streets here, you may be surprised on what you see.
Yeah, well, the last time I was in New York was 2005, and I mean, I noticed a fair number of women having dresses and all these fancy fashion clothes, and
you
can find that in L.A. too, but in most of suburbia, like Seattle, for example, I mean, there's no fashion sense at all. It's total grunge, and I mean, people just dress like bums almost. I mean,
you must have been on the Upper East Side or the Upper West Side.
Yeah, I haven't. I just went to New York, but if you go to like Russia, for example, I mean, you'll see that women dress super feminine. You know, they have very creative taste in their clothes. Some of them even have cartoons on their clothes. I mean, they're just. I mean, they like wearing unique clothes that are flashy and sexy and women in other countries are very proud of being feminine. And you mentioned marriage. Yeah, I mean, marriage is dangerous because, a woman who divorces you after a few years or even 1 year could take a lot of your property, and it's just a bad decision. There's just too much risk in it. So it's actually better to just, you know, live together, I guess, than to get an official marriage. But that's what happens once you involve the government in your personal life. I mean, you just get screwed over. And in the U.S., there's like a divorce rate of like 50% to 60%, which is huge. But one of my friends on my website and by the way, you can go to happierabroad.com and download the PowerPoint file that's listed at the top, and then you'll see the statistics that my friend Steve put together, where it shows from the USCIS or something, the statistics where it said that men who marry foreign women have a 20% divorce rate versus the 50% to 60% divorce rate in domestic marriages. So that really tells you a lot. What I've noticed when you marry a foreign girl or just have a girlfriend is that she has a different attitude than the women do in America, because she sees you and her as one unit. You know, she sees you and her as one.
Yeah.
Whereas an American girl sees you and her as two units, even if you're married.
Yeah.
Still two people with two separate interests and two separate needs, and you're like two business entities that have to negotiate and compromise to get along, and both entities have to feel like they're getting something from each other for them to stay. And people, I mean, there's not just feminism, but there's a huge narcissism in America where everyone feels that, you know, they're entitled to the very best of everything, and which leads to total disappointment, because when your expectations exceed your reality and what you can get, you go right. I mean, you eventually get disappointed. There's just no way around it. So yeah, that's another issue at stake too. You know, there's just too much of a sense of entitlement, and then, you know, that's just not. It's part of America. Part of, you know, American culture, but it's not just that. It's just the material. It's one of the consequences of a materialistic society. I mean, the more, you know, not just America, but the more materialistic any society gets, the more it's like that. The more soulless people are, the more people are shallow and impatient, and just don't look deeper. They don't have any inner life or spiritual life. They don't. They just become very, very shallow, and they get less friendly. There's less of a connection with others. I mean, there's no camaraderie. One of my chief advisors has always said that in America, when people meet and get into a group, for example, they do so only for convenience and for business related purpose. You know, after the business is done, then they separate and no one, you know, talks to each other anymore. I mean, it's like the majority of communication between strangers is all just business. And one of my fans actually, you know, said it all in one sentence, which is this: America is a country that's built for business, not for money. So yeah, I mean, people just you know, live to work and are trapped in this materialistic mindset, and they don't they just don't enjoy any connection with other people. There's just this hostility in social interaction that does not exist in most countries. But some countries have gotten worse. You know, once the materialism creeps in and starts corrupting people, then they start getting, you know, spoiled and have these entitlement conflicts.
Well, you know, I think the media is largely responsible for a lot of this. You know, a lot of people, you know, when the media does what it does year after year, decade after decade, generation after generation, it sort of gives a false impression that, at least to a lot of people, that the media represents the changes. But I'm beginning to think that In many cases, the media is actually causing the changes and making us believe that we are changing. I'll give you an example in advertising. You know, if you look at advertising, if you look at advertising in the papers, if you look at advertising, you know, you're on the subway here in New York City or on one of the buses, go to a website, go to a job site, there always seems to be more women than men, even if they depict a group of people. And the men are, I've noticed as the decades have gone by, they're in the photo or the advertising, the men are relegated to the background. They show women or a woman taking charge, women directing men. Sometimes they're directing men even much older than they are. I remember I was at a job site, and they showed an image of a woman. She was a young girl, maybe like 24, 23. She was sitting on a bench with her laptop, and there were two guys, you know, presumably they were all job applicants. The two guys were sitting alongside of her sleeping before a job interview, and behind her, through a glass window, you see a woman, maybe about 30-ish, talking to a bunch of older men. And, I mean, the imagery there is women taking charge, men being subservient, men being, you know, just buffoons, you know, fools, that sort of thing. And this is what we're subjected to on TV, in the movies, in advertising, and it begins to condition people's, I think, collective mind, so that we begin as men to look at ourselves as second-class citizens. And I was wondering what your thoughts on that are. Do you agree with that? Do you have you noticed that yourself? You know, how do you feel about that?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, of course, and I mean the media. I mean, does not represent the people. I mean. And neither does the government, of course. I mean, we all know that, but I mean, the media is involved in some type of social engineering, and it has been since the early 1900s. I mean, if you look up Edward Bernays, for example, who was related to Sigmund Freud.
He was his nephew.
Hired by the U.S. elites to you know, engineer people's wants and needs. And
yeah.
You can see a 4-hour documentary about this called Sensory of the Self, and it's on YouTube if you want. I mean, it explains the whole history of the social engineering, the advertising agency, et cetera. And some researchers actually think that there's a plan to blur the gender line between men and women, and that's the real purpose of feminism. It comes out as a Trojan horse, trying to mask as some equality movement of equality.
Well, all you have to do is emasculate the men, because the men are the competitors. You know, if you're some elite group and you want more and more power, the best way to get more and more power is to emasculate the men, because they're the ones who are going to oppose you, basically, right?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, men are the ones that start revolutions. I mean, women don't start revolutions. I mean, they never have in history. And also, women, you know, are more easily manipulated, I mean, by the advertising industry, the culture, et cetera. I mean, they conform a lot more than men do. I mean, men are more straightforward. I mean, they're more, you know, like more predictable. I mean, you can't really change what they want and what they need. I mean, their needs are relatively unchanged. You know, they know what they want. You know, whereas women are more easily changeable. And you can see this not, you know, and of course that's why most advertising is geared toward women, because they're more influenceable and suggestible. But not just in advertising, you can see this in general too, because men, I mean, women tend to conform to the culture and the environment and you know, whatever, you know, like they worry about fashion, for example, and men don't usually care about fashion. And women are bigger on political correctness than men are. You know, men prefer to just tell it like it is and just are more straight. They prefer to say more straightforward. I remember what I was going to say now. For example, another way you can see that women are more changeable is, I mean, if you look at the difference between women, you know, who suddenly, you know, become rich or get money or move from low class to middle class to upper class, you'll see that they change a lot more than when a man, you know, moves from low class to middle class to upper class. I mean, men's personalities are more stable, whereas once a woman has money, I mean, she totally loses the need for love and romance and intimacy, whereas, you know, no matter how much money a man has, he still needs love, romance, intimacy, female company, etc. I mean, he's not as changeable, you know, with his economic status as a woman is. So once a woman, you know, has, you know, a high economic status, she just does not need men anymore unless, you know, he's a lot wealthier than she is and has super status, high status. So as much as I love women, you know, I really do, and I've had so many great female friends, it's really not good in society's interest to give them so much power and money and rights because, you know, once they have all of that, every woman is either going to not need men or only want the top 10 or 20% of men. And that leaves the bottom 80 to 90% of men in terms of status with no choices at all to become miserable and lonely. So it's not a good thing for the majority of men to be too over-empowered. I mean, that's just a sad fact of society. There's even an ancient quote from Cato, you know, this ancient Roman philosopher or something, which goes like this: if you make women your equal, they'll become your masters. So there's no, you know, there's no true equality you can have with women. The women are different than men. I mean, they're more nurturing, they're more, you know, they're more good at, you know, loving children and keeping families together. I mean, they just have different skills and needs, and they have a feminine energy that a man needs. And once you take that femininity out of women, and you know, they just become, you know, some creature you can't, you know, you can't really define. And that's a contemporary problem that's never existed in history. I mean, that's the thing about America. I mean, every country has problems, but these problems like women hating men, not needing them, and neighbors being disconnected and not talking to each other, these problems are modern problems. They've never existed in human history before. I mean, people have always known their neighbors, been close. I mean, women have always needed men. Women have always appreciated men and admired them and looked up to them. It's only in modern America that all that has changed and gone downhill, you know, whereas in human history it was never like that. So,
no, it's never,
you know, I'm not, you know, of course, you know, against women's rights or anything. I mean, I'm very pro women, but I'm pro, you know, femininity, not pro them becoming masculine. I mean, that because when a woman becomes masculine, I mean, what's a guy going to do with her? I mean, he can't treat her like a man because she's not a man, and you know, women that are masculine get offended easily. It's like walking on eggshells around them, and if you flirt with them, they'll see it as degrading and oppressive and insulting. They see that as flirting as an insult to them because they want to become masculine, not feminine. So you can't flirt with them, you can't treat them like a woman, and you can't treat them like a man because they don't act like men at all. So you know, when you're around a masculinized woman who's very uptight and is easily offended, like most American women are, I mean, you just don't know what to do. You can't treat them like a man. You can't treat them like a lady. You can't, you know. I've noticed that, you know, when an American woman steps out of a car or a bus or a vehicle, she won't take your hand unless, you know, you're her boyfriend. Whereas in other countries, women always take a man's hand when they're exiting a vehicle. Even if that guy is just a friend or an acquaintance, I mean, they'll still do it. And even if he's an enemy, she'll still take his hand when she gets out of the vehicle. But in America, women just don't like that because it offends their masculinity. They don't want to become feminine.
Right.
They deep down, they despise their femininity.
Right, and you know that's a very big problem too for men in the workplace, because now women are competitors with men. They're competitors for your job. They're competitors for getting the promotion that you want, especially, you know, here in a place like New York City. What I've noticed is that men seem to have fewer and fewer rights in the workplace. And, you know, just to go one step beyond that, if you happen to be a short guy, some women will try to walk all over you. And because of political correctness, it seems that you can't do a damn thing about it. You just have to stand there and tolerate it. And I think this actually helps to emasculate men even more, because, you know, in bygone years, men were the breadwinners. Now women, because they're empowered in the workplace, they're making more and more money. They feel they need men less and less. And when they hook up with a guy, when they hook up and they get married, even if their salaries happen to be equal and they get a divorce, the man winds up paying more. He pays it all to the woman. And it's basically like a vicious circle. And this is true especially for the short guy. The more rights women get, the more men become emasculated, the less money they make, the less likely they are to attract women, the less likely they are to therefore have children. And basically all they can do is grovel and apologize. And as I said, this is the vicious cycle itself in operation.
Yeah, and you know, there's not much you can do about that. I mean, the only thing you can do is to go where you're wanted, where you're appreciated, where you're compatible. I mean, you can't change your society or your culture. You know, you can't change the way things are. But you know, but you can. You know, there are so many. There's like over 200 countries in this world, and you can always choose another culture that appreciates you, where women are still feminine, and where if you're a short guy, you might not be seen as short. For example, if you go to Thailand or the Philippines or Cambodia or Vietnam, women aren't as tall there. So. You know, if you're a guy, you know, who's 5'5 or 5'6, I mean, most women will still be shorter than you, and the height thing won't be a problem as much, and you won't feel so insecure every day. I mean, that's one of the worst things, you know, when you're a guy, is when you're anyone, is waking up feeling insecure.